How can Jesus help us see how an Old Testament Sabbath that was precious to him can also be precious to us today? Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on glimpses of our God, and our topic for today is Lord of the Sabbath. The conversation partners are two members of the Walla Walla University School of Theology again, Stravko Stefanovic and Paul Dibdahl. So let me take that question up for the two of you. How is it that Jesus can take an Old Testament Sabbath that was obviously precious to him? How can he show us that it's a day that is also precious for us today? Not just a burden, but something precious.
I understand that in his time, people had a very specific approach to the Sabbath, and that is that it's time to be holy, to be by oneself, to focus on God, and that was it. And very often that went at the expense of treating someone else kindly. And Jesus and the prophets tried to correct that, that Sabbath is relational not only toward God, but toward the people around us.
Where would you go in the Old Testament, Stravko, to make that point?
Isaiah 58.
Isaiah 58.
For sure. That would be a starting point, and I'm sure there are a number of other places as well.
Okay. What is it that has made Sabbath feel like a burden? What are the roots of that problem? Because you have some people who simply are grateful to get rid of the Sabbath. Where does that come from?
Well, in our last lesson, we talked about how, is God's law in general something that we relate to as a test or as a gift? And to me, Sabbath fits in that conversation, that just about any of God's instruction, any one of God's instructions to us could be taken as a kind of burden, as a sort of test, limiting, somehow cramping our life. And the same would be true for Sabbath. So just as I could, the commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, my, how incredibly limiting that is. And that maybe sometimes I might want to do something other than that. And why would God? Well, the same sort of thing with the Sabbath, the call to remember the Sabbath. It would be tragic if we were to approach it as merely somehow a test or a limitation. It's an invitation into a day of special connection and relationship with God and then with other people as well.
And if you look in the Old Testament, for example, where the Sabbath is given as a day not only for the people, but for their servants and for their animals.
Even the animals. Yeah.
Even the animals.
So is it to keep the Sabbath or to celebrate the Sabbath?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's sometimes a dilemma, too.
Yeah, yeah.
It's both, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And I like to draw a dilemma. It can be exactly the same goal, but it's just the way of presentation. For example, mm-hmm. if my good wife were to say, Alden, you better be home tonight by 8:30,
yeah.
or else. I got just enough acid in my system saying, I think I'll come home later. But mm-hmm. if I know that she is eager for me to be home, see, mm-hmm. there is a sense in which, I really should be home by 8:30, but it's one that I'm eager to come for, not simply because there's a sense of threat. And one of the tragedies in marriage are things that make perfectly good sense and should be the natural response of love. They become a burden because they are mandated, and that really becomes.
I felt like you asked the question as to why that was the case, and I don't know that I answered it, or I don't know that I really could, but it just seems to be this human tendency that we have. To move in that direction, things that begin as good and in some ways simple, we try to define more closely. We then try to enforce upon others, and pretty soon the gift becomes a real burden.
I think in terms of the American practice, of course, I think right now there's a great danger that we will lose any sense of sanctity for sacred time.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply what's happening in our world. But when we were in Scotland, it was our neighbors who helped explain to us the difference between the continental Sabbath and the British Sabbath. For whatever reason, Puritan influence in Britain, the rules on Sabbath keeping were much more rigorous. I remember once even just taking our girls to a walk in a park with another young couple, Adventist couple, who had girls about the same age as ours. Our girls headed for the swings. And this other family said, not today, this is Sabbath.
No swinging on
Sabbath. No swinging on Sabbath, see. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't make the issue. We didn't say, well, our kids are liberated. You know, we just simply said, not today. But it's that era of restriction. And then when we went to Europe, I saw something very beautiful. Now, as an American Adventist, I had been trained to watch the edges of the Sabbath with the clock. See, you better be ready on Friday. And then on Saturday night, you were liberated. Ta-da, sundown, see. What I discovered when we spent our year in Germany was that they weren't ready on time on Friday often. It's troubling. But the beautiful thing came on Sabbath afternoon. Time and again, we were with German families, with teenagers, young children and teenagers, when the sundown came. And it would go, worship would go 15 minutes, half hour, 45 minutes after sundown. And there was none of this clock watching. It is almost as if they were reluctant to let the Sabbath go. And I think it was because probably they had more flexibility in terms of what they did on Sabbath. Now, I have to be very careful on Sabbath because I'm so competitive that you give me any kind of a game and I'll turn it into a nasty experience. I still remember once going up to a cabin in the mountains and my brother and his boys were just gently throwing a ball at a big 4x8 piece of plyboard that had a hole cut out in it. See. And so I came out, and boy, it wasn't long before we were keeping score. And, you know, I felt a bit guilty about it. And when I commented that about my brother, and he said, well, we were doing quite fine until you came along. So I think it's our cultural background that has, in a sense, instead of seeing the Sabbath as a joyous gift of God, it's become something, well, it'll keep you from having too much fun. And then when the Sabbath's over, boy, it's time for liberation.
But it is equally possible to separate the Sabbath from the Lord, and that's where I begin to feel uneasy, and maybe that's why the expression "the Lord of the Sabbath" is important. That in the end, it's not all about Sabbath, but it's about the Lord of the Sabbath. So, the Sabbath is basically not an end in itself. But it should bring me closer to God and give me an opportunity to show others what God's character is like. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's pick up an Old Testament-New Testament contrast. In the Old Testament, Book of Numbers, you pick up sticks on the Sabbath, God's command, they be stoned. Okay. Now, Jesus seemed to be very deliberate, and I'm talking here about my initial question, how does Jesus help us open this up? Jesus seemed to be very deliberate. There are at least five specific miracles, Sabbath healing miracles, where he went out of his way to do something on Sabbath that he could have done on some other day. And probably the most notable one is at the Pool of Bethesda, a man who had been sick for 38 years. Jesus chose to come on the Sabbath and commanded him to pick up his bed on the Sabbath. What does that tell us about Sabbath keeping? What can we learn from that without destroying the Sabbath? Jesus obviously cherished the Sabbath, but what was he trying to do there?
Well, I think Jesus was trying to correct or restore the Sabbath to its original intent in a religious culture at that time. That I think with good intentions in trying to protect and guard the Sabbath had multiplied laws and rules and instructions about Sabbath keeping that did make it a burden for people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Jesus comes on the scene, and to just sort of summarize, I think, the teaching of these miracles, Sabbath healing miracles, Sabbath was a day of restoration, a day of healing. So Jesus seeks out people to heal on the Sabbath. He heals in a public way so that what he does will be seen by others. He can use that then to teach something about the Sabbath. And as you mentioned, he seeks out people who have a chronic condition that it could have waited for another day. But of all the days for restoration, Sabbath was the day for Jesus.
Yeah. Now, let me turn to another interesting story. And I put a very naughty headline on this, breaking the law in order to keep the law. Matthew 12. The disciples walked to the grain fields on the Sabbath, and they plucked grains and ate them. And the Pharisees saw it. They said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." He said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which it was not lawful for him or his companions to eat, but only for the priests. Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath day the priests in the temple break the Sabbath and yet are guiltless? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here, but if you have not known what this means, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Now, the interesting thing about that Old Testament experience, David actually wasn't very truthful. And as a result of his lies, the whole family of priests at Nob were killed. But Jesus uses that as an example of where human need took precedence over the specifics of Sabbath keeping. Help me to understand that application and how that might be helpful for us today.
I would like to come back to what I have said before, and that is the Sabbath is an institution in the Bible, but there is always a danger to separate it from God who instituted it. And we know that God is pro-life, and therefore that's what the purpose of that time would be, to restore life, to save on that day, and not to add one more reason for which a person may be condemned.
And go ahead, Paul.
No, I wasn't.
Okay. It's almost impossible to correct an error without going too far the other direction.
Right.
I think it's often like riding a toboggan. Now, in parts of the world where I remember great fun when I was a kid, there was one place where we would go to ride down this road in the winter. But there's always a danger that if you overcorrect, you'll hit the snowbank on the other side, and it's very difficult to come right down the middle. So I think Jesus was trying to correct an impression that was clearly there. I believe that we have a great challenge today when it comes to understanding the Sabbath, because as far as Seventh-day Adventists, the people who have cherished the Sabbath, we've always kind of taken our cue from Sunday keepers. And among Sunday keepers now, almost no one keeps the Sabbath. So we need to come back again and ask the Lord of the Sabbath and search Scripture, so that we can find ways to make the Sabbath meaningful in our day.
We want to be Sabbath keepers, not Saturday keepers.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Thank you very much. Our time is up. Next week, we are going to talk about creation here. My conversation partners will again be Stravko Stepanovich and Paul Didgall. My thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the good word, I'm Alden.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.